Forecasting and Accountability Special April Fool's Edition come to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Bella?
Here.
Senator Blaney?
Here.
Senator Frelich?
Here.
Representative Martino? Senator Murphy?
Here.
Representative Myers?
Here.
Representative Nethrick?
Yes.
Representative Poe?
Here.
Senator Schoenberg?
Present.
Senator Severson? Senator Trotter?
Eight.
Total of eight members answering the roll. Forms present, see business. Kick off the agenda. I want to extend our personal welcome to Senator Murphy. This is his first meeting, I understand.
Thanks for coffee.
And he will be buying coffee for everybody in the room afterwards.
Lovely.
The agenda is that we will hear a very grim update on the FY 2010 economic forecast and an updated 09 revenue estimate for the balance of the year. With that, unless we have any questions, we'll turn it over to our panelists. Gentlemen, good morning.
Thank you. We've got a rather lengthy document here, so what I'm going to do as the economist for the commission is to quickly go over some of the highlights of what we expect for the rest of this fiscal year and next, and then how Illinois fits into the context of this, rather than going through in detail all the facts that are here. I don't want to cut into Jim's time, which really gets into the numbers that we're projecting for the budget. And we're using this handout, and if you turn to page 4, which is chart 1, you can see that when you look on a fiscal year basis, it's anticipated that every quarter of fiscal year 2009 will be negative. In other words, the economy will be contracting in each quarter of this fiscal year. And that compares with 2.4% real growth in fiscal year 2008. So there's no doubt that we're in rather a severe recession, and this time it's a consumer-led recession. And the consumer has been extremely pessimistic. If you turn to the next chart, no matter how you measure it, if you use the Conference Board's figures or the University of Michigan's sentiment survey, we've reached levels that didn't exist before this measure started. So we're at all-time lows in consumer confidence, and there's very good reason for this. First of all, if you turn to the next page, you can see it's been a severe decline in employment. This is U.S. data. We'll get to Illinois later. We've lost in the past 14 months 4.4 million jobs, 1.3 million in the last 2 months alone. So the consumer has been very concerned. Those who haven't been laid off are worried about being laid off. We did get some figures out this morning, I noticed on television from Challenger and Gray, that the amount of layoffs in March were the lowest they've seen in months. However, don't get too excited about that, because most people, November was the worst month. As they planned their budgets, that's usually when they did their layoffs. So while it's good to see the number down, it's not totally unexpected that this came early or late last year and early this year. Not only has confidence been hurt by falling employment, but another thing that is occurring that's hurting consumer spending, and remember, consumer spending accounts for about two-thirds of total spending, is we've seen a sharp decline in home prices. Now, this normally hasn't occurred. If you look at this chart, you usually have a recession about every 10 years. We had one in 1971. Housing prices continued to rise. We had one in 81. Housing prices continued to rise. We had one in 90. Housing prices continued to rise. We had one in 2000. Housing prices continued to rise. That's over. People were using their equity in their homes as a bank account. They were using it to modernize their home because values kept going up. They were using it for college loans. They were using it for durable goods expenditures. All of a sudden, that's over with. Home prices have been falling. Since peaking in 2007, they're down by 22%. Yesterday, they had some figures come out for some specific cities. And in the past 12 months, Las Vegas, some parts of California, and Phoenix were down by a third, 33% in home values in just a year. So this has sopped up some ability for consumers to continue to spend. Granted, Illinois hasn't been as severely hurt as some of these other places. However, living in Chicago, even Donald Trump can't sell all of his units. So it's not very encouraging. And not only has the employment fallen and home prices down, but even what savings they have left in their 401ks have been drastically reduced. This just shows the Dow Jones average on chart 5. And since its peak in 2007, by early March, that has dropped in half, so half the value. And therefore, you got a lot of people talking about, we don't have a 401k, we got a 201k. Now, in the last month, there was a little leveling off here. This is not a forecast. This is just, you know, we're still at very severe low levels. That's going to take some time, I think, to go back to anywhere near where the economy was, where the Dow Jones was. And, of course, when you have fewer jobs and you have income constraint and spending constraint, it's going to show up at the state level in receipts. And so the next chart on chart 9 shows what's been happening. This is a survey done of 16 states, which are geographically diverse. We do participate in this survey, and it's representative of the nation as a whole. And you can see that we already are at lower levels than we were during the past recession. In fact, the index for overall receipts for February was at 11.4, which is the lowest it's been since this measure was started. And while Illinois mirrors the national pattern, in fact, economy.com says 97% of what happens in Illinois can be explained by the national economy. There's also another factor, and that's that historically it tended to lag. And I think you've probably all gotten the economy.com look at Illinois that they do once a year for the commission. And as they stated there, that while we were a little slower getting into this economic recession than the national numbers would show, now we're lagging and we're going to be a little, we're not going to respond as quickly when it turns up as the nation as a whole. Well, that's the picture for this fiscal year. What about next fiscal year? If you turn to chart 10, you can see we've had 10 recessions in post-World War II period. The average length of recession has been 10 months. The last two recessions in 1990 and 2001 were kind of brief. They were only 8 months. We're already through the 15th month of this recession. Now, in 73 and in 81, we had recessions that lasted 16 months. I think ours is going to last a little longer this time. Many economists look, however, at 1980 and 81 as those twin recessions as one. One lasted only 6 months, and then, boom, we went into another recession that lasted 16 months. So that would be like about a 22-month span. I think we're going to be more on the order of that than these earlier recessions. Also, when we get the recovery, the feeling is it's going to be more of a U-shaped, a gradual recovery, rather than a sharp upward bounce in a V-shaped form, which sometimes has occurred in the past. The next chart shows the manufacturing sector. This, of course, has been severely hit. Again, we're at very low levels. We have been actually declining in manufacturing in 12 of the past 15 months. If you look at Chicago and the nation, we're at about that 30% level, which is much lower than we were during the last recession in 2001. But it hasn't been just manufacturing. If you look at the non-manufacturing sector or the service sector, we can see again that we're at lower levels than we were during the recession of 2001. So it's a broad-based recession. Now, what's going to get us out of it? Well, we've got the federal stimulus program, which is just beginning to be effective or put in place. So we've yet to feel that. And then we have monetary policy, and that's really been lowering interest rates since, turn to the next page here, since 2007. In fact, we've got the key federal funds rate down in that 0 to 0.25 range. In addition to that, the Fed has taken many steps to sort of unfreeze credit in the markets. They've increased the limits on bank CDs, I'm not sure. They extended that for a while to money market funds. They've aided the commercial paper market, and that seems to be working, where people are able to borrow in that again, and many other factors. Of course, the big fear, and the president currently is feeling this a little today, is that when you print all this money and do all this spending, what's that going to do to inflation? The Germans in particular, they remember when they took bushel baskets of marks to buy a loaf of bread, and a lot of them blame that for the rise of Hitler. They're very concerned about overspending and what this may do to inflation in the future. Right now, however, the Fed thinks they can control that. If you look at the next page of consumer prices, they've come down sharply. In fact, 2 months ago, January, there was zero inflation. March, it was 0.2%. I'm sorry, that was February. And even the core rate, when you take out what could be happening in oil and food prices, et cetera, a more stable rate, we're down to only 1.8% of inflation. It's been steadily down. So they're more worried now about deflation than inflation. But as the velocity of money starts to increase with the economic recovery, the Fed has to be alert to start to pull some of this liquidity out of the economy. They're convinced they can do it. As I said, they're more worried about deflation. They haven't always been that accurate in their timing. They're always afraid that when they start doing this, they're going to upset an early recovery. So that's something we've got to watch for, but it's not a problem in the time period we're looking at. So when we look at what do we expect in fiscal 2010, our forecasting service gives three scenarios. The one we've been basing ours on is what they call the baseline scenario. And the baseline scenario, which they give the odds of 60% of occurring, has the economy continuing to fall into the first quarter of fiscal 2010, followed by slow but steady increases through the remainder of the year. And again, this is the national economic outlook. Then there's an optimistic scenario, which has the recovery starting a little earlier, and then a pessimistic scenario that continues to decline at greater rates in the first half of fiscal 2010 before flattening out in the third quarter. So that's a rather prolonged period. I might add that in the budget, when they're looking at Illinois, they were using also Global Insight, but using the pessimistic scenario. In any of these scenarios, it indicates that a recession that is longer in term than we've seen in the post-World War period is quite likely, but that it's going to fall far short of the long period we saw during the Great Depression, when we had 43 months of continuous decline in economic activity. I won't get into the numbers, but as you can see, the next part just breaks down these GDP numbers on a fiscal year basis. And you can see, again, that after an increase of 2.4%, we've got two back-to-back years, a negative 1.8 and negative 0.8 the following year. You might also see that the unemployment rate averages, because that lags, 10% in 2010. That means you're going to get above it. You look at Illinois, we had a peak in February 1983 of 12.9% unemployment. And since we're lagging, it wouldn't totally shock me if we got back to those levels sometime in the forecast period. Well, how does Illinois fit into this? Again, let's look at Illinois' employment. It follows the national trend, again, with this lag. In fact, as theeconomy.com said in that report they did for us, the state's economy held up slightly longer than the U.S. economic recovery, but succumbed during the second half of last year. And in fact, if you look at the household employment or the establishment survey, which most people use because that's where they actually go and count the number of jobs at firms, we can see that in the 12 months end of February, while the national employment fell by 3%, Illinois fell by almost 3.5%. And of course, the result is that we're getting a higher unemployment rate. Doesn't show up so much in this chart because I don't think the last plot's on here because we have benchmarking and all the other figures delayed for a while, but we're a full 0.5% higher than the national rate right now. That's at 8.1, we're at 8.6. We have some of the same problems that the nation has. If you look at chart 15, you can see these are Illinois building permits. And the trend is sharply downward. Again, we didn't really see a housing correction in the last two recoveries. One of the reasons that we're having the bubble finally burst this time. Illinois hasn't been quite as badly down in home prices as some other areas of the country, but nevertheless, it isn't immune either. If you look at the new car truck registrations for the state, also far lower than we've seen in many, many years. And that hits Illinois because if you look at auto parts and manufacturers within the state, including Ford in Chicago and Chrysler and Belvedere and Mitsubishi and Normal, they've been hard hit and not expected to turn around anytime soon. And finally, one strength we've had over the last several years has been we're fifth in exports in the United States, and we did quite well with farm goods, manufactured goods, et cetera. That's come to a very abrupt halt. If you look at chart 17, you can just see that after from 2002 through last year, a very sharp rise in exports to the bottom sort of just dropped out as Europe has been, in many terms, worse economic decline than the U.S. So in conclusion, according to Moody'sEconomy.com, while 97% of the variation in the Illinois economy is related to variations in the national economy, there has been a tendency for Illinois to lag during economic cycles and thus may continue to do somewhat worse than the nation in the period ahead. And again, unemployment lags and employment lags, et cetera, so that the effect on receipts are pushed even further down the road. And that's sort of the premise that we were basing our economic forecasts and revenue forecasts at the general.
Thank you. Before, first I'd like to add Senator Trotter and Representative Martino to the roll. Does anybody have any questions for Ed before Jim picks it up?
We just call Ed Rosie around the office. Page 22 shows how monthly revenues have fared through the first two-thirds of the fiscal year. And as you can see, more often than not, the trend has been down where we've actually lost revenue in comparison to the same months of the previous year. Through February, we're down $1.209 billion, which represents about a 6.6% decline. A more detailed breakout of those figures are shown on page 23. We've highlighted those most crucial areas. Personal income tax is down 2%. Corporate down 8.1%. Sales tax down 3.7%. Interest income, as Ed had talked about, the rate of returns being virtually non-existent, is down 65%. Riverboat transfers and receipts, we've at the commission, we've been talking about this fall off now for quite some time. We're down 25%. Other transfers, in large part due to timing, is off 35%. And base federal sources is down 6.3%, and that's based on reimbursable spending. So all those areas combined equate to the 1.209. A quick glance in the change from 2008 column shows lot of negatives there. In fact, the best we can do through the first two-thirds of the year is just being flat in public utility and cigarette tax. So the decline is very wide. It's immense. And unfortunately, it doesn't look to be getting any better. In fact, it'll probably get worse over the remainder of the fiscal year. On page 24, you'll see a few charts. We title onerous trends. This is both for both personal and corporate income tax as well as sales taxes. And you can see that not only are we falling well below zero, but into the negatives, but you can also see very little evidence that there's a slowing. In fact, over the remainder of this fiscal year, once final payments are received, we think that in the case of personal and corporate, you're going to see those declines accelerate. Sales tax probably will also accelerate over the remainder of the year. So what does this translate into an actual forecast of revenues? That's shown on page 25. For fiscal year 2009, the commission now estimates that revenues will be $27.356 billion. That reflects a dramatic $2.303 billion from the previous fiscal year, a fall off of 7.8%. The large economic sources are expected to continue to fall, as I've mentioned, finishing the year for personal down 5.2%. Corporate income tax down 18.2%, and sales tax down 6.1%. Other large fall-offs would be interest income down 64%, riverboats 22%, other sources or other transfers nearly 22%, and then base federal sources down 2.4%. Now, there is some light, I guess, at the end of 2009, and that would be the anticipated federal stimulus. We've yet to receive it, but we anticipate about $2.154 billion coming in before the close of the fiscal year. And that's comprised of $1.35 billion from increased reimbursement related to Medicaid spending, and the remaining $800 million is connected to education. In terms of Medicaid, we would go from approximately 50% currently to a little over 60% for 27 months. This is according to the federal stimulus. So again, base revenues down $2.303 billion. If you do add on the federal stimulus, that figure is reduced but still negative, falling $149 million over the same period last year. How do we compare with the Bureau's recent estimate released with the governor's budget on March 18th? Well, we're actually slightly higher than they are. We're up $185 million over the governor's estimate. Most of that comes from the economic-related sources. If you look at the dollar difference there on the right-hand column, you'll see that our personal income tax estimate is up $166 million. Corporate 43 and sales tax up 101. We are down in our estimates of lottery transfers, riverboats, and other transfers. And some of the rates needed to reach the estimates are shown in the little table there at the bottom left. In terms of the overall revenue shortfall that we anticipate for this year, since the budget was predicated on $792 million in growth, not only are we not going to get that growth, but as we've seen, we're going to actually fall $2.3 billion. So in total, the commission is anticipating a fall off of over $3 billion from the enacted budget. Since they're slightly higher, GOMB would have that at $3.28 billion. And if you do include the federal stimulus, those numbers would be $941 and $1.126 billion. And that's shown in the bottom table on page 27. Looking ahead to 2010, we say stay buckled. It's going to continue to be bumpy. Ed kind of laid out the economic forecast for 2010. Unfortunately, the revenue picture will probably follow suit. The graph on page 29 does a good job of illustrating why, even if the recovery does happen earlier than what many anticipate, by the time it shows up, it'll be too late for 2010 for us. I point you to the blue line there, if you can distinguish that. That illustrates personal income tax receipts after the last recession ended, and you can see that the trough was approximately 12 months after the close of the last recession. Since we are still many months away, in all likelihood, from the end of this recession, don't look for any quick turnaround in terms of personal income tax, as well as sales tax. That also troughed about 6 months after the close of the last recession. So again, things are not going to turn around quickly, and next year will be difficult as well in terms of revenues. The actual dollars are spelled out on page 30. Our forecast for 2010 is for base revenues to be $26.868 billion, a fall off of $488 million from this year's revised estimate, or down 1.8%. In terms of the rate of growth estimated, you can see that personal income tax is forecast to fall 5.7%, corporate income tax, another disastrous year, down 25%, and sales tax is down an additional 1.5%. We do have $50 million built into the estimate from the proceeds of the sale of the 10th license. Many of you remember, hey, I thought it was $125 million or something in that magnitude. It is $50 million now and the remainder when that license becomes operational. So we're thinking probably 2011 before you would see that other bit of money. Federal sources anticipated to go up $855 million. This is the governor's figure. This is based on your spending estimates. Why is it going up so high? Well, certainly we want to take advantage of the fact that our Medicaid reimbursement will go from 50 to 60%. So the more that we spend now, obviously we'll be able to capture these additional federal monies. If the federal stimulus is included in these calculations, you can see that the loss year over year actually goes up to $760 million. That's simply a function of the amount of federal stimulus anticipated for both this year and next. Next year, it's slightly less, about $1.882 billion. The Bureau, in their March 18th budget book, laid out their forecast for 2010 as well. Their fall off would be $385 million, according to their estimates, down about 1.4%. We'll see in the coming pages that the bottom line in terms of base estimates is very close, with only about $82 million different there. But they do have a couple of different growth rates that I just wanted to point out. They anticipate a much better, if a 2.2% decline in personal can be considered better, but you know, we were at 5.7. They anticipate that fall off to be only 2.2. Corporate, they consider next year also be a washout for corporate, down 21.9%. But they're particularly down on sales tax, where their forecast is down 4.2%. In the bottom, in the grade section there, you will see the governor's proposed $6.290 billion in additional revenues. I will caution that part of that is that federal money that we've identified before. So if you'd want to look at those other areas. And in fact, on the following page, we've gone ahead and broken out those items as we understand them. For this fiscal year in 2009, really the only additional revenue proposal that I haven't mentioned thus far is $200 million in fund sweeps. But in 2010, you're all aware of the $2.9 billion that he anticipates from increasing the personal income tax, or close to $300 million for corporate, $274 fund sweeps, chargebacks, cigarette tax increases, the loopholes of 287, and we've highlighted, as we understand those values to be, over in the right part of this table, an entitlement fees of 185 and some miscellaneous of 40, totaling $4.4 billion in addition to the federal money that we've already talked about. The table on page 33 simply compares the commission with the Bureau's estimates of revenues for next year. Again, overall, we're very similar. $82 million separates the two agencies. That's less than 0.3%. So the overall figure really isn't an issue. What's probably worth discussing, at least, is the personal income tax estimates and sales tax estimates. you see we kind of flip-flop those. We're considerably more pessimistic on our personal, whereas they're more pessimistic on the sales tax. But overall, the estimates are very similar in value. And that's really everything else. The next couple of pages is just, you know, illustrations, charts, graphs, history, that type of thing. What we went ahead and did today is also included what we'll call an appendix of other pertinent financial information, and that's shown on page 36. And in it, we have a breakdown of the governor's estimated budget deficit, the history of general funds balances, income tax increase scenarios. We've got some retirement information, some bonded indebtedness information, a very brief overview of the proposed Illinois Jobs Now program that the governor has spelled out, as well as some capital appropriation figures as they're understood by us. I'd be happy to go over any of this stuff with you now, or look at it, get back with us with questions, or however you want to go about it.
I'd like to lead off the questions. First of all, thank you for a very thorough and sobering overview of the task ahead of us. The question I want to ask you is if you could comment on how the liquidity crisis that we're currently experiencing in the markets, how that manifests itself now versus how it manifested itself during early recession periods.
Well, there really isn't much of a comparison. I mean, this is almost a unique experience this time. A lot of it's centered around the housing and the creation of, I mean, you can put the blame anywhere. What they were doing was making mortgage loans at very low rates, which couldn't possibly be paid off on the premise that you never really have a decline in housing prices. That, of course, was erroneous, and the more they started to pack of these things, then they'd package them and they'd sell them to other investors, and then they'd slice that up, and of course the rating agencies were rating these things AAA, and so it didn't only affect the U.S., in fact the president's getting all kinds of grief now saying that this is a U.S. created problem. To some extent, there's some relevance to that, although it's a worldwide phenomenon. So there really isn't anything comparable. It's much more serious this time. I'll give the credit, some credit to both the federal government and the Fed since that creation, to the extent that they were very fast to act. And in fact, the commercial paper market in particular was the first that the Fed was able to unfreeze so that corporations could get their short-term money without any problem. Had that collapsed, you would have really had a very serious effect.
So how does it ask you to translate that into more narrower terms. It seems to me that one of the greater challenges that we have is that healthcare providers who we contract with, whether it's hospitals, nursing homes, smaller community-based providers for mental health and developmental disabilities, vendors like Walgreens, the state is into Walgreens for about $150 million, but Walgreens can handle the float. Right. Walgreens can stay in business while the state owes them $250 million. It strikes me that what has distinguished the crisis we're in now versus earlier recessions is that we can't ask, not only has the state reduced everybody's credit worthiness by making all these providers wait so long, but now apparently these providers cannot go out and access lines of credit the way they had in the past in anticipation of getting paid at some point by the state for their Medicaid receivables. Could you comment on whether or not that's accurate or just anecdotal?
No, I think it is accurate. I think what
what we're yet to see is the, what banks are doing right now is they're saving their capital. They're not lending. Now, once they go through the stress tests and so forth, now some banks can. I mean, I happen to bank with Northern Trust. They wanted to pay the money back because they were criticized for having a golf outing. You know? But the government doesn't really want them to pay back some of these banks, because then the ones who need the money are going to stand out as bad banks, and they don't want that to happen. But I think as you go through this, and more funds, you know, the encouragement is to get the banks to lend more. While they're putting some of this money in, they're talking about changing mark to mark. I mean, should you have a distressed asset on a mortgage that's being paid regularly and it's never been in default, with a person who can easily pay this, be considered a troubled asset, a toxic asset? Well, in today's market, when nobody knows, it's going to maybe sell for 70 cents on the dollar, which is ridiculous. So they're talking about getting rid of that mark to market and the value of these things. And part of the program isn't in yet, where they'll get this, and I think properly so, this private and versus government with some guarantees and selling these toxic assets. Now, people are a little afraid to go in this because a lot of money can be made. They don't want Congress coming back and saying, whoops, you made too much money on this. Now we're going to tax you a large amount. So that's, even though they swear that's not going to happen, that still may be a little hindrance on this. I think the banking system is the number one problem. You got to get that going again. I think that's where the emphasis is going to be. But, you know, this hasn't been that long a thing, and they're really trying to get this thing going. And I think that many aspects of it will work, and they will get the line of credit. But all kinds of people are getting, I mean, my niece and her husband had a line of credit with the bank for their house in Oak Park. No problem. No, they've never used it. All of a sudden, the bank came in and said, oops, we're taking that away from you. Well, we never needed it. But, I mean, they're going back, and they're just, you know, cutting credit card limits, et cetera, because they're trying to maintain their capital. Banks are usually leveraged 6-to-1, where some of these investment houses were 30 or more to 1 leveraged. And you take a company like AIG, that's where the people made money. What did AIG have? Its headquarters full of people creating products, but really no reserves behind it. They were doing insurance that these credit default swaps wouldn't go bad. Well, they did go bad, you know, and they were held throughout the world. So they couldn't let that collapse, although, it's a much more serious problem. It's going to take months and months and months for it to work out so you can reestablish lines of credit. But I think they're on the right track. And I
think so, a follow-up to that, I did comment on this as well. It strikes me that one, as we look at our role in the coming weeks and possibly into the next year, I can't recall a time where it's increasingly likely that the state or one of its affiliates may have to be able to sort of banking function for providers in order to ensure that they have that access to credit. It strikes me that we may need to create some kind of issue debt, to create some kind of revolving fund so that healthcare providers don't wait as long or longer as they may need to wait because we don't have the cash flow to pay them, because they now cannot pay them to the banks as readily as it could before. Is that?
Well, that's something the legislature has to do.
But have you seen a time where vendors or providers could not access credit to the extent that they cannot now?
I haven't personally.
Okay. All right. Thank you. 100% done.
I think just to add to that, what Senator Schoenberg was saying, with the stimulus package for the Medicaid, Those bills are going to have to, if they take that $2 billion, those bills are going to have to be paid within 30 days. I don't know how we're going to go from a five-month cycle to a 30-day cycle.
I think the current plan is outlaid by the governor would be to short-term borrow about $2.25 billion. At least that's what was in the cash flow plan that he laid out. To borrow it at the end of this fiscal year, not to repay it until 2010. That would get money into the system so that we could utilize that to pay off Medicaid bills, to get the enhanced federal reimbursement, and to get the cycle down to 30 days and maintain that through next fiscal year.
Well, I'm on the phone all the time with people that are calling in, you know, and we took out that short-term loan in December to pay down the Medicaid bills. I don't even think that was $1.4 billion. They haven't even started making the payments back on that, and they're already up to $2 billion in Medicaid bills right now. So I don't even know how they're going to, even taking out a $2 billion loan, they're going to cover, because now they're already almost $4 billion behind if you're paying back the short-term loan, and you've got another almost $2 billion right now.
It's the Medicaid bills is a huge problem, there's no doubt.
I just have one other question on this. Is on page 25 on the on the interest on state funds and investments down 65%. I mean, who's taking a look at that?
Well, state funds are invested by the treasurer's office, and I know they have at least two occasions of issuing
like that.
Not on.
Is it on now? Okay. As you know, the Treasurer's Office is responsible for investing the state's money. I know they've issued at least two press releases indicating that rates of return have significantly gone down, and so too will the state's revenues from those lower rates of return. So I think what we're seeing here is just manifesting what's happening with the rates of return that Ed had indicated. Obviously, our balances aren't improving. So a combination of lower balances and much, much lower rates simply creates this large fall off.
Well, do you think, Ed, with the with what the governor proposed in the increase of taxes on the businesses, what do you think the impact on that is going to be when already this year, this report has got a catastrophic decline in corporate revenues, correct? 25% down. What do you think the impact of increasing those taxes on corporations would be?
I would make it worse. I don't know.
Has the governor seen this detailed report?
Well, no, but again, if you look at our comparison with theirs, essentially they've arrived at the same conclusions.
Right.
They're nearly 20% in declines next year as well for corporate, so I don't think it would shock them at all. How corporations will respond to an increased corporate income tax rate, you could ask five different people and get five totally different answers. Some would say that they'll ignore it, that it's just a cost of business. Others will say it will decimate them and make them leave the state in droves. The answer lies probably somewhere in between.
Thank you.
Senator Brady.
Just for the record, Ed's nickname's Rosie. What's yours?
Yes, it is. Rosie. Yeah, it is.
If you could, along the lines of Representative Bellet's questions, could you maybe do a cash flow analysis of what she's talking about, meeting the limitations of the federal stimulus package, borrowing short-term along with what we've had in the past to analyze the governor's proposal?
Well, the cash flow analysis, if you want to take a look on page 37, you could essentially put in any figure that you were comfortable in putting in. This basically walks to the governor's $11.6 billion deficit number. We're often asked, how does he get there? Well, this is how he's laid out that deficit. You have base operating deficit in 09 of
negative 4.29 billion. We've borrowed 1.4, we're going to pay back 1.427, so we're going to end 2009 with 4.317 in a budget deficit. In 2009, he anticipates 200 million in fund sweeps, as well as including the federal stimulus money, putting that into the system, as well as adjusting the appropriations for this year, will get you an operating deficit of 2.7. Now, here's where the short-term borrowing of about 2.25 billion comes in. That money will come in at the end of this fiscal year. It will not be repaid this fiscal year. So that's counted as inflow, and as a result, the budget deficit would drop to 497 million. Now, if we carry this over to 2010, again, this is laid out base versus with revised revenues. Under the base scenario, you would have 26.972 billion in revenue. The appropriations would be 34.261. Your operating deficit, 7.289. The 7.289, when added to the 4.317, gets to that often discussed $11.6 billion deficit. So in terms of with revised revenues, you can see the impact of that short-term borrowing, how it allows you then to end the year, even though you're paying it back, to end the year with a $96 million budget surplus. Again, though, you all seem to disregard the fact that we're bringing into this fiscal year $835 million in a budgetary deficit. That's shown on the following table. So when that is included, the 11.6 would actually grow to 12.4.
To do this, under the Constitution, is it required that they declare a revenue emergency?
I believe that is correct.
Have we ever done that?
I think once that I can recall.
Technically, what has to be done to declare that?
Governor, the Comptroller, the Treasurer.
The Governor, the Comptroller, and the Treasurer all have to agree that there's been a failure in revenues.
So simply their agreement is that declaration?
There are, I think, two or three ways to effectuate short-term borrowing. So one way is to have the Treasurer, the Governor, and the Comptroller. However, that...
No, I'm talking about the revenue emergency. In the Constitution, there's two types of borrowing, one in this fiscal year, one outside the fiscal year.
So to finish, if they do declare a failure in revenues, the short-term borrowing can only be for 1 year. It has to be repaid within the year. So that's why, for example, I alternatively have been suggesting that, as you know, we had this bill in the Senate that was an initiative that we've been working on with the Comptroller to have a multi-year short-term borrow to ensure some liquidity and cash flow for the health care providers that would be tied exclusively to the federal stimulus money and the hospital assessment.
Under the Constitution, the only way I understand that we can borrow is to declare in the declaration of a revenue emergency. On an annual basis, up to 15%. The question is, aside from your legislation, whether that's constitutionally provisional, what I'm asking, if we did it before, what was the requirement to do it? I mean,
we'd have to go back and look.
Did anyone declare last Friday? For some reason, I seem to think that the governor's office may have declared a revenue emergency last Friday, wondering how and under what basis they did that.
We'll have to investigate that.
If we could clarify that, they did. I think they did that. That for them to borrow without legislative approval, it would be limited to 1 year, and it takes those three constitutional officers to affirm that there's a failure in revenues to do a, but it would have to, but the length of that borrowing could only be for a 12-month period.
Would you just give us your interpretation?
Sure.
Of the two types of borrowing we can do,
if there was
when it's been done and under what circumstances it can be done, and how you declare under the Constitution and law, the revenue emergency?
I don't know that there's a set benchmark.
That's what I'm wondering.
I don't believe that there is.
That's what.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much. Our next schedule. Meeting is scheduled for April 21st at 10 a.m. in this room to review and approve the contracts for the state employees for the short term in 2010.
Which house?
10.
That's what I meant.
Representative Bella.
Thank you very much. We would like to request that there be a vote on the closure of Howard that week if you don't want to have it on the business agenda of the meeting of the 21st, a couple of us before the meeting are talking about that. So can you schedule that week?
I can, just to give you a quick update. The governor's office had indicated that it wanted to appoint an individual to review the Howe issue and advise the governor on that, what their policy would be. And they informed me yesterday that those plans for that particular individual cannot be, they're not going to be able to engage that person. So I've asked them to provide me with an alternative.
Well, because we were discussing that earlier, just a few of us informally, and talking about even if the governor has concerns about this or whatever, this committee can still take a vote. That does not mean he has to take any action.
No, that's absolutely correct.
Right, because I think the lives of all those people, that meeting we had at Howe was sometime in the summer. I'm not sure when it was. But I mean, we're coming in at least 9 months since then.
When in December, January, has
uh-huh. We set to refresh everyone's, still here, to refresh your memories. President Myers and I sent a letter dated February 9th to the governor, telling the governor that we were going to give them 60 days after the removal of his predecessor, and that we intended to issue a final opinion regarding this by April 29th. Now the governor is in the governor's office has indicated that their plans have fallen through on someone to advise them, to advise the governor on the course of action to take. I'm going to double back with them and let them know that it's our desire to continue to uphold this letter.
Thank you very much.
Okay, so no further business before the commission, we must adjourn.